my folks. Last month, the rank-and-file labor struggle, the struggle from below, had lost a wonderful, brilliant, selfless comrade, Mike Parker. Born in a union family, Mike joined the Young People's Socialist League at the University of Chicago. He was friends with Bernie Sanders. Then at Berkeley, he was a graduate student. He got active in the student peace movement. Then the free speech movement. That led the free speech movement led the 1960s student uprising. And then he worked with the California Peace and Freedom Party. After that, he co-founded the International Socialist. He, like many of its members across the country, were taking jobs in union industries like phone and trucking. Mike went to Detroit, got a job at Chrysler as an electrician, then went to Ford. For most of his life, in fact, he spent time. He worked in the shop with the rank and file, doing organizing that challenged the United Auto Workers Union that was then degenerating into bureaucratic business unionism. Mike was a brilliant writer, doing books accessible to rank and file workers, also left academics. He was a featured speaker at rank-and-file conferences later in life for the last 14 years. He became a main organizer and strategist with the Richmond Progressive Alliance, Richmond, California Progressive Alliance. That's become a great example of how one city, over 100,000 mostly poor folks, could take over city government and win important reforms, including of the police. Today I'll be talking to Jane Slaughter. Welcome to Cable.
Thanks, Bill.
Jane was a longtime comrade with Mike and the International Socialists. She worked on the shop floor at Chrysler, like Mike, but in a different department, and wrote for the UAW Chrysler Plant newsletter. Then she jumped ship to write for the newly formed monthly journal Labor Notes, the voice of rank and file labor. She was a lead editor until recently, but still writes and speaks a lot and is active in the Democratic Socialists of America. Along the way, she wrote many articles, several books, including co-authoring two with Mike Parker, Choosing Sides, Unions and the Team Concept, and Working Smart, a union guide to participation programs and reengineering. She also edited the Troublemakers Handbook, too, and co-wrote Secrets of a Successful Organizer. So, Jane, tell us about the International Socialists, your work with Mike Parker, the work in the plant, the organizing, then working together at Labor Notes. Later in the interview, we can discuss your books with Mike and the core ideas that informed those books and both of your organizing.
The International Socialists was a small group of people who had been active mostly in campus struggles, also some community organizing. They had a strong vision of socialism from below. They rejected the way the Soviet Union had turned out and knew that that was a top-down system that they were not trying to organize towards. But they could see that socialist ideas were held by only a tiny minority of people in the United States. And they were trying to figure out, how do we help socialist ideas grow in the working class? Because, of course, a socialist, we knew that it's the working class that has to fight to end capitalism and replace it with socialism. So one of their ideas for doing that was that they themselves, these young people, and people were all pretty young at that time, would get working class jobs. And they did it in a very strategic way. They tried to figure out which industries were most important and which unions were most important. And so, therefore, people got jobs as auto workers, as steel workers, as teamsters, and as telephone workers, and also some teachers. And their idea was that they would help to organize on the shop floor in those workplaces and help to foment struggle, to put it in a more leftish-sounding way, and that out of those struggles, people could learn, could grow as organizers. We would meet the natural leaders that already existed inside these working class organizations, and struggles would grow, people's consciousness would grow, and out of that, we could build more of a socialist movement.
In that struggle, Jane, you met Mike Parker, not so much on the Chrysler shop floor where both of you worked. It was a really big plant. But you met them in the political organizations of Detroit, including the organization Solidarity. And you and Mike then began writing. What do you see as the highlights of that work together and the core ideas that formed your writings, especially the books Working Smart and Choosing Sides?
Well, this was where Mike was really brilliant. He was able to organize phenomena that were happening in the unions and in the factories before anybody else really was able to see what was happening. It might be hard for our listeners to really grasp what was happening in the early 80s. First of all, it was a big recession, lots of plant closings. Unions were asked to cut their wages and open their contracts to do that. But at the same time that the companies were aggressively cutting people's jobs and cutting their wages, they were also pretending to hold out an olive branch and say, we can work together, we want your ideas, we shouldn't be antagonists anymore, shouldn't the role of unions be to help the company be profitable, and really trying to obscure the fact that interests of management and workers are opposed. Whatever management gives up is a gain for workers, and whatever workers give up is a gain for management. So, but these programs were very sophisticated. They were called quality circles or quality of work life or employee involvement. And they involved workers meeting together and brainstorming ideas that, you know, often could lead to cutting jobs because the whole idea was more productivity and efficiency and getting people to work harder to do that. It would take a long time to explain all the ins and outs, but Mike was able to analyze these programs in a really sophisticated way that he could get across to workers why these were no good. A lot of people instinctively knew the programs were no good, but they didn't really know how to make the arguments the way Mike did. And so he wrote this first book, Inside the Circle, A Union Guide to Quality of Work Life, which I edited as I was on the staff of Labor Notes. And we published that, and it was a huge success because people were looking for answers. They wanted to know what's going on here and how can we fight these programs or how can we take them over? How can we undermine them? So Mike was really a pioneer in that regard.
My sense was that that period, there was also this fear of Japanese industrialization, and they were going to wipe out so much of U.S. industry by their efficiency and low wages at that point. And the companies played on those themes by saying, we're at war with the Japanese, we have to get more efficient, we have to be able to meet their quality standards, and if you want a job, you have to support the company in that struggle. I think that's part of the reason it was so effective.
Yes, the Japanophobia was very strong at that point, and the unions, some of the unions at least, the auto workers, were totally buying into that and trying to blame things on the Japanese, which in Mike's view, in my view, was very wrong-headed. It's your own employer. It's GM, it's Ford, it's Chrysler who's trying to do these things to you. It's not Japanese workers or even Japanese management. So Mike was able to analyze what was sometimes called the Japanese production system or the Toyota production system, also called lean production, and analyze what that was like and say to people, you know, your own company is adopting this. It's not the Japanese that are imposing this on you. And then also, he was very proud, we were all very proud, that when we held our schools for union workers, we call them team concept schools, we invited a Japanese unionist who was fairly prominent over there in the left wing of the Japanese labor movement. His name was Ben Watanabe, and he came to Detroit and lived in Detroit for a year and was one of Mike's very best friends. And he spoke at all our team concept schools and just really broke down the idea that the Japanese are our enemy, because here was a strong Japanese unionist that had the same union ideas as the American unionists at our schools. So we were very proud of how we were able to fight back against that xenophobic anti-Japanese sentiment.
Jane, I recall a chapter in your book, Working Smart. You suggested that when possible, don't just say no or reject the idea to get into a quality circle or a team, but you suggest that workers can love the quality circle to death. by bringing real needs to the table, by suggesting how they can make a better product, like by using higher quality steel, by slowing the line, by having breaks in quiet rooms where you could decompress. I recall reading about the Lucas Aerospace Company in England who was shutting down. The workers organized. They organized to keep that factory open, but proposed a whole set of useful products that could be made at the existing plant with a few equipment modifications. Well, of course, the owners rejected that. But in those meetings, the workers realized that they could rebuild and run that plant. That in the old wobbly saying, the boss's brains, they're under the workers' hats.
Yes, the lure of these programs was that management was saying, we want your ideas. We're sorry we were so mean to you in the past and ignoring workers' ideas. Now we recognize that you do have a brain and we want to get your ideas. But of course, the ideas they wanted were for how to cut jobs. How can we reduce this team from 6 people to 5 people? And that which would mean harder work for everybody and fewer jobs. But what we advised, as you said, Bill, was that the union come in with their own ideas for improving work. Well, how could we improve work on this team? Maybe it would be by increasing it to 7 people or you know, just quality of life things like more water fountains or longer breaks or anything that would improve life for workers. However, we were very insistent that that meant that the union people on the team had to meet separately to come up with those ideas and reinforce each other and be united when they went into the mixed team that was workers and management, workers and the foreman. And, of course, management was completely against that. They said, oh, we're all the same here. You're not supposed to be able to tell union from management. They were completely against any kind of separate meetings. And that's where things would often break down, is that management would refuse the union's request to have the right to do that. And then that exposed management for, you know, for what they were really trying to do.
Yeah, I suppose in those separate meetings, some visionary workers might say, yeah, how can we really change the working conditions and make better products? I think that the workers knew how to make better products. They would just cost more, and the companies would rather make a cheap product that broke down quickly. And, you know, this system of planned obsolescence.
Yes, one of my really major insights was into what management calls quality. What management would call quality was getting the widget that you are producing right 99% of the time instead of 95% of the time. Well, that was their definition of quality. So how can we make things more standardized, probably use more robots so that we're getting it right 99% of the time? But that did not change the quality of the widget in any way. It was the same widget that they'd been producing all along. They just wanted to make sure there were no mistakes that resulted in scrap, which is waste, and therefore cost something. But the quality of the product was no better at all. And so Mike was really good about teasing out management's definition of quality, different from the consumer's notion of quality.
This is KABU Radio, 90.7 FM, Bill Resnick talking to Jane Slaughter. We've been discussing her work with Mike Parker, who died recently. They had both industrialized, working on the shop floor in Chrysler's assembly plant. Well, it was a big plant, and they mostly came to know each other outside the plant in political groups where they discussed their work. Mike organized in auto for 30 years. Jane worked on the line and came to edit and write for the UAW, United Auto Workers, Chrysler newsletter. Fired from Chrysler, she joined up with the newly formed monthly Labor Notes, the voice of rank and file labor. That began your collaboration, and both of you had a gift for making ideas accessible to workers and accessible to the larger left, including academic and intellectual circles. Tell us about Mike's talks, that he had a gift of holding the audience and getting the audience engaged and thinking. That's because he used examples and parables. He invited listeners to think, which is the advantage of that kind of pedagogy.
Yeah, I think that the common thread running through everything that Mike did was his insistence that people had to run their own organizations and learn how to do that. And that was the only way that people were going to be able to learn how to run society eventually under socialism. If you look at the participation programs, He was totally against fake participation and only for real participation, as if workers were really running things. If you look at his later book, I believe it was 1999, Democracy is Power, that he co-authored, that book was about how unions need to be democratic, and not just an argument for that, showing that a union is stronger if the members are involved, but giving very practical advice on how to do that. How do you run a meeting democratically, for example? How do you get people to want to be involved in their union? And then finally, the work that you mentioned with the Richmond Progressive Alliance, Mike was just very insistent. It doesn't matter if you win elections if you haven't organized people in their own behalf in the process. He threw himself into electoral work in the last 13-14 years of his life, but he was always very clear that that electoral work was not going to matter if we didn't have a strong labor movement. So that's why he kept his ties to Labor Notes. He was always writing for Labor Notes, giving money to Labor Notes, speaking for Labor Notes. He wanted to see a strong labor movement with the members actually in charge. And in his electoral work, he insisted, we have to have an organization here. We're not just a get-out-the-vote organization. We have to have a membership, a rank-and-file base that democratically controls the Richmond Progressive Alliance, organized people. So that thread, bottom-up worker democracy, was part of everything that he did.
This is Cable Radio, 90.7 FM, Bill Resnick talking to Jane Slaughter. Jane, maybe sum up Mike's achievements. They live on.
Well, I can count three, maybe four, hopefully, organizations that Mike left behind that are really important. First, as we talked about, was the Richmond Progressive Alliance, which has had more electoral success of winning control of the city council and then actually doing things like shifting money from the police budget to other parts of the budget and huge victories against Chevron. Thinking about climate change, way back in 2014, Mike and the RPA were leading a fight against Chevron, which was trying to control their town. Fantastic example of how a giant corporation can be beaten by rank-and-file shoe leather. That's number one. Number two, of course, is Labor Notes, which for 43 years now has been the voice of the people who want to put the movement back in the labor movement. And Mike's contributions to that through the four books that he wrote and the countless articles that he wrote and all the speaking he did, including in Brazil, Argentina, Japan, his contributions to making Labor Notes a very valuable organization for people who are trying to revitalize the labor movement. I just can't say enough about that. He was a big supporter of Teamsters for a Democratic Union, although he, of course, was not a Teamster himself. But he, you know, was an advisor to Teamster leaders and promoted that. And now there's a new organization in Mike's old union, the United Auto Workers, called Unite All Workers for Democracy, UAWD. And Mike asked that if people wanted to make any donations in his behalf, one of the organizations he picked out for that was UAWD. It's challenging the UAW leadership. They won the right to elect top officials rather than having just convention delegates do it. It's now going to be a vote of the entire rank and file of the UAW, and UAWD will be running candidates to try to help in that process of rank and file taking over. So Mike was extremely heartened to see that at the end of his life. So yes, he leaves behind a big legacy, both in how do we make the labor movement stronger and smarter, how do we do electoral politics smarter as well.
Jane Slaughter, thanks so much for talking to us today.
I could talk about Mike all day long, so I'm happy to do it.
Thank you.
Take care.